This episode of Dean Bakari's Meaningful Show is brought to you by Flashbooks, where you can get best-selling business and self-improvement book summaries that you can read or listen to in under 20 minutes. To learn more and get started for just a buck today, visit www.getflashnotes.com. Welcome to the Meaningful Show podcast, where every single week we work to bring you an inspiring insight, idea, or interview to help you live better, work better, and be better both in life and in business. Brought to you by MeaningfulHQ.com, we've got one very simple goal here on this show, and that is to help you do more of what matters and less of what doesn't. I'm your host, Dean Bakari, and if you're ready, then I'm ready. So let's get into it. Hey, have you ever wondered why you can't get your point across to somebody when you want to convince them of something? Have you ever gotten so frustrated, so angry because you can't get somebody that you love or work with or care about, like a spouse, a child, a coworker, your boss, customers maybe, and you're trying to get them to understand something, maybe do something, but you're just not getting across the way that you want to. If these are issues for you, then today's episode is really going to be helpful because we're going to go over a few big ideas from a powerful book on communication called Nonviolent Communication, written by Marshall Rosenberg. And this is honestly one of the most powerful and impactful books that I've read and come across on the subject of communicating effectively. And this guy who wrote it, he's passed away some years back, but this was his life's work. This book was a culmination of his life's work and this process that he developed called nonviolent communication, or NVC for short. And basically, he's applied it around the world with hundreds of thousands of people, and he's done so successfully. And we're going to go over some of the mechanics of it. I mean, he's even done it with warring countries, in militaries, with marriages, with leaders and teachers from all over the world, different organizations, businesses. I mean, it's a powerful framework that he's developed. And we're going to go over some of the first few big ideas from this book. I'm going to share with you some of the techniques that he goes over in the book and the basic principles for how to communicate with others and resolve conflicts more quickly without compromising, but instead getting your point across and doing so in such a way that everybody's happy, resolving conflicts quickly and coming to agreements with other people, diffusing arguments without getting defensive, things like that. How do you do that? We're going to go over that in today's episode. So let's get right into it. So in a nutshell, nonviolent communication is about getting what you want, being dependent upon the honest expression of your feelings and needs to other people. And this concept of NVC introduces real ways to communicate without relying on judgments or demands, right? Without having to strong arm somebody. How do you do that? So let's dive right into it. The first big idea that we're going to go over is about connecting with others as well as ourselves. In the book, he writes that as we keep our attention focused and help others do likewise, we establish a flow of communication back and forth until compassion manifests naturally. What am I observing? What am I feeling? What am I needing? And what am I requesting to enrich my life? So what you are observing, feeling, and needing, what you are requesting to enrich your life. We're going to go over this. Those are some of the principles that you want to use, the four main components to this process of communicating with other people and getting your point across, resolving arguments and conflicts. So, nonviolent communication. It's a way of communicating that leads us to give from the heart, allowing us to stay connected to our compassionate nature, the part of you that you would prefer to stay in contact with, to connect with. That compassionate nature that we all have inside of us through our relationships with other people. And by practicing nonviolent communication, we can stop this harmful communication pattern that we all sometimes find ourselves in, where we're defending, withdrawing, attacking, and instead replace it with observing, identifying, and articulating. So the four main components that he breaks down in the book, Nonviolent Communication, NVC, is this: observations plus feelings plus needs plus requests. So, number one, the concrete actions that we observe that affect our well-being. Number two, how we feel in relation to what we observe. Number three, the needs, right? The values, desires, etc., that create our feelings. And number four, the concrete actions that we request in order to enrich our lives. So typically what happens is we observe what's happening when we're talking to somebody or when we're in any given situation. We observe what's happening, whether it's something being said or done, and then we introduce our own judgments on top of it. We evaluate it, right? Do I like this? Do I dislike this? Do I like what she said? Do I not like it? You know, what's her deal? You know, what do I think about this? But with NVC, we practice the idea of observing without judging, right? Really seeing what somebody's saying, really seeing where they're coming from. So here's how a conversation rooted in nonviolent communication would play out, right? We would observe without judgment. We'd articulate what that message or action makes us feel. And then we identify what we need in response to that message or action. And then we make a request based on that need. So for example, a helpful example might be the parent-child relationship, right? If the parent, say you're a parent, you want your child to tidy up their room or a family living space, right? The living room. Now, there are several possible ways for you to approach that situation. A parent who doesn't practice nonviolent communication might say, God, it pisses me off when you do this. Just pick up your stuff. Why don't you ever pick up your socks when they fall, when you leave them on the floor like that? Don't do this, right? You get angry and flustered and maybe raise your voice a little bit. But somebody who practices nonviolent communication might approach it in a way like this. They might say, hey, when I see your dirty socks all over the living room floor, so that's an observation, I feel irritated. That's a feeling, because I need more order in the rooms that we share. Now that's a need. You communicate your need. And then you'd follow that up with an observation, right? The feeling plus need with a request. So that might be something like, hey, would you be willing to put your socks in the room or in the washing machine? So you would say, again, when I see your dirty socks all over the living room floor, I feel irritated because I need more order in the living room, in the common spaces of the house. Would you be willing to put your socks in the room or in the washing machine? Boom, that's it. So when you communicate in that way, there's a structure to it. You again observe what it is that you dislike, and then you talk about how that makes you feel. And then you communicate your need, what you need, and then you make the request. So this process, NVC, by the way, it's not meant to exist as a rigid formula, by the way, but rather an adaptable communication technique that you can utilize again in any situation. That's the beautiful part about it. And he reminds us in the book, Dr. Rosenberg does, that the essence of NVC, nonviolent communication, is in our consciousness of these four components of observation, feeling, need, and request. Being conscious of them, being aware of them, not in the actual words that are exchanged, but in the awareness of how important it is to communicate what you want with these four components in mind, and empathetically receiving the needs and feelings of others in the process. So An actionable insight from this first big idea that I just shared with you might be to identify and write down your own responses to three recent words or actions that you received from other people, and to note down whether they're based in judgment, right? Do I like or dislike this message or action? Or if they're based in feeling, right? This action makes me feel hurt or joyful or irritated, amused, et cetera, et cetera. Write them down, right? Identify and write down your responses to three recent interactions with others and how it made you feel. Did you judge that situation? Did you judge that person, right? Was it based in judgment? Did you say, I like this, I don't like this? Or were you based, did you walk away from that conversation with a sort of feeling, a way in which it made you feel? How did it make you feel? And then we'll talk about, again, you want to then write down, sketch out, hey, how could I have done that differently? How could I have approached this in the nonviolent communication process in mind? How could I have observed that situation? How could I have communicated things differently if it ended up being an argument and we both stormed out of the room, for instance? Right? Remember, keep in mind, observation, feeling, need, and then a request if you want somebody to do something. And this brings me to the next big idea, which is you can't do a don't. You cannot do a don't. And this is probably one of my favorite tips that he mentions in the book, because a lot of times we communicate our desires as demands, right? And that's another form of language that blocks us from really connecting with other people. And, you know, we've got the power to communicate our desires without making demands per se, without making things such a black and white type of thing, where either it's our way or the highway. Right? We all know people like that. If it doesn't go exactly the way they want, they blow up, they get pissed off, they walk away, they storm out of the room, they slam things, they raise their voice. But when we judge, when we criticize, when we diagnose and interpret, rather than express our feelings directly, people are more likely to hear criticism, to get defensive, and invest their time in self-defense instead of self-compassion and communication, instead of helping you figure out how to meet your needs and make them met and walk away from that conversation in such a way where they feel like they won and where they feel like you won as well, where you both walk away feeling good about it. Now, how do you avoid conversations and conflicts where people walk away pissed off, right? One way to do it is to maintain productive lines of communication between ourselves and other people. And we can practice observing without judgment. Now, for example, if we want to express frustration, right, about a coworker's tendency to put things off until the last minute, we might say, you know, we might be tempted to say, oh, Doug procrastinates. Right? He's just constantly procrastinating. But this kind of communication judges and criticizes poor old Doug. And it fails to request a change in Doug's behavior, proving unproductive at best and incendiary at worst. Instead, we can practice nonviolent communication and say something like, for instance, Doug tends to prepare for his presentations the day before. That's an observation. This kind of communication expresses specific concerns without judging or criticizing the guy and encourages a solution-based conversation when you approach him about it. So vague language contributes to confusion. But we can use clear, positive language to express requests without making demands. Right? So by focusing on what we do want to happen rather than on what we don't want to happen, we can speak to our desires. And this expression of feeling can be paired with a request for action and a request for reflection to make sure that our needs and desires have been heard. So for instance, if we speak to Doug, we might also say, Doug, hey, I don't want you to wait until the last minute to prepare this presentation. Well, this is asking Doug not to do something, but it provides no direction for what Doug should do, right? It asks him not to do something. Don't do this. Don't do that. But what do you want him to actually do? And this is where the part where you want to remember this following maxim. Keep it in mind. You cannot do a don't. You can't do a don't. Instead of saying, Doug, I don't want you to wait until the last minute to prepare this presentation, we can say something like, hey, Doug, I'd like you to have a draft of the presentation done 3 days before the presentation's due. Boom. Will that timeline work for you? Right? This is clearly asking Doug to do something and asking him to confirm that he understands and will commit to that task that you asked him to do. And this method of using positive language to express requests for action and reflection can be used whenever we're speaking to people, but can also be used in an extremely compelling way to communicate with groups also. So what do you think would land more? What do you think is more effective when you say, don't do this, don't do that, or when you actually clearly communicate what you do want somebody or a group of people to do? Of course, when you communicate what you do want, when you communicate the action you're looking for, you're more likely to make your message land. So here's an actionable insight for you from this big idea. You want to identify and write down three conversations that you've had in the past week or so in which you focused on the negative, right? When you said, don't do this, don't do that. And then rewrite these comments or requests in such a way that you make them more positive. How could you have said do instead of don't? And remember, you cannot do a don't. So think about some scenarios, maybe even that you did today, speaking with your spouse, wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, maybe your child, maybe a coworker. And if you said don't do this, don't do that, how could you have turned that around into a do statement? You cannot do a don't. I love that. Now, let's go into the third and final big idea we're going to go over from nonviolent communication. That is emotional liberation. Emotional liberation. In the book, he tells us that we deny responsibility for our actions when we attribute their cause to factors outside of ourselves. What does that mean? Well, when we communicate in impersonal ways, we're not prepared to encounter people or behaviors that we don't like or understand and are likely to react in terms of how wrong they are, right? I don't like this. That's wrong. Shouldn't have done that, this and that. And we judge it, right? If an employer assigns a task that we don't want to do, for instance, or you're a family member asks you to do something you don't want to do, then all of a sudden we assign them the label of mean or unreasonable, right? If a family member fails to complete a household chore that you both agreed that they would do, now all of a sudden they're lazy or ungrateful, right? Through the practice of nonviolent communication, though, we have the power to turn our attention away from the practice of classifying or determining levels of wrongness about people when we communicate with others. We also have the power to turn our attention toward what we and others need. So in the book, Rosenberg refers to this process as emotional liberation and observes that most people experience it in three stages. Stage number one is we believe ourselves to be responsible for the feelings of other people. Right? So it's easier and safer to take responsibility for others than it is for ourselves. And we all do it. But this heavy emotional burden can be really destructive. The second stage is we get angry and we reject this burden of responsibility for the feelings of other people. Right? So once we acknowledge that this pattern of unnecessary responsibility exists, we get angry at the time and energy that we spent on things that we couldn't change. And as a result, this stage is marked by obnoxious claims like, well, that's your problem. You know, that's on you. And rigid demands of our own needs. I need you to do this, right? And then the third stage is this. We turn our attention to our own feelings take responsibility for our own intentions and actions. So once we've passed the anger of stage two, we can start acting responsibly toward ourselves and our own feelings. These are things we can control. And in this liberating third stage, we see just how productive and rewarding our attention can be. It's possible to pursue emotional liberation and to embrace positivity by turning our focus inward, right? Engaging in responsible exploration of our own feelings, and by avoiding patterns of communication that lead us towards blaming or judging other people. So an actionable insight for you from this third big idea is this. Write down your answers to the following questions. Whose feelings do you believe yourself to be responsible for? How does that responsibility make you feel? Have those feelings affected how you communicate with that person? And if so, how would you like to change that style of communication? Use some of these, ponder these answers to these questions that you ask yourself. Maybe write them down, journal about them a bit, and then re-listen to these big ideas. Go over these emotional liberation stages and see if you need to adjust. Reflect and revise upon your own communication style and methods and see if you can't tweak them a bit to make them more effective, to make your whole approach more effective, because it could turn your life around. You could get people to comply. You could get people to walk away happy after a conflict or maybe a disagreement. You could just generally, when you're, the quality of your communication oftentimes determines the quality of your life. And if you can change the quality of your communication, elevate that quality, then you can change your life completely. So those big ideas are from the book, Nonviolent Communication. Powerful book, very, very powerful book. If you want the full book summary, you can get that at getflashnotes.com. There are several other big ideas that we discuss in the full book summary version of this, and you can read it or you can listen to the full audiobook summary at getflashnotes.com. Again, until next time, go out there every single day and live like you give a damn. It's Dean. Listen, I hope you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you found this episode inspiring, or if anything else you've heard on the show has helped you or made an impact on your life in any way, I'd really appreciate it if you showed me a little love with a quick review over on iTunes or on whichever podcast platform you tune into the show on. Every single review helps us reach and inspire more people to live like they give a damn. Listen, if you've got self-help questions of your own that you'd like me to answer live on the podcast, hit me up over at meaningfulhq.com. You can submit them over on the contact page, or you can just shoot your questions directly to me at questions@deanbakari.com. Thanks again so much for subscribing, sharing, and tuning into the show. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's because of you and tens of thousands of other listeners from around the world tuning in every single week, week after week, day after day, that we are able to continue creating content to help you crush it and make an impact in your life and at work. So thank you for being part of this and continuing to share the podcast with your friends, your family, and anyone else you think it could help. Until next time, this is Dean Bakari telling you to go out there every single day and live like you give a damn.